Cryptocurrencies are still in their infancy, despite over a decade of evolution and seemingly endless amounts of newspaper headlines. Since 2009, countless coins have been launched, with varying degrees of success. In this podcast series, we'll be looking at one in particular, Scottcoin. Scottcoin is new, it's unique, it's made to do good, and it could revolutionize the market. Join me, Temple Melville, as I give you all you need to know about this exciting and bold new project. Hello everybody, I'm Temple Melville of the Scottcoin Project CIC, and I'm very privileged to be here today with a chap called Andrew Smith. Andrew Smith used to run the £103 million renewable energy fund set up by the Scottish Investment Bank and head of investment for DP Energy. But since then, he's moved on to greater things. He has a founder and a member of Greenbackers Investment Capital. He founded Deja Blue Consulting. He's a board member of the UK Marine Energy Council. He's a member of FTEC 2.0 Working Group. He is an advisor to the EU Innovation Fund, the UN Sustainable Blue Financed Initiative. He's a member of the World Ocean Council and Ocean Energy, and is an assessor for solar impulse funding in Europe. Now, I've no idea what any of that means, but he's obviously a good egg. So I'm going to just say to Andrew, thank you very much for coming today. And it's wonderful to actually see you and talk to you again about these sort of things. I think I would just like you to say to me, first of all, what brought you to be such a blue advisor and so on? What changed in your life to make you do that?
Temple, thanks very much. And good morning, everybody. Hello, wherever you are. And I'm quite tired when I listen to that introduction. It sounds like I'm very busy. Of course, these things have come to me over a period of years. I was a lawyer for 45 years. In fact, that's where you and I first engaged, of course. I describe myself now as a recovering lawyer. 2013 was when the transition came. For me, personally, I saw a job running this renewable energy investment fund for the Scottish Investment Bank. And my wife, who's very clever, told me I wouldn't get that job. But I went and beat them over the head and was very fortunate to land the position. In that job, I was investing equity and debt into really innovative energy projects like wave and tidal projects. And that really sparked my interest in the early stage clean tech sector, but also in the blue economy. And it's one of those things that just intellectually grabbed me. And investment into clean tech, investment into the blue economy, that's not really working yet. And if we are to have any chance at all of halting and reversing climate change, it's well understood and well accepted that the blue economy, which touches many things, it is going to have to expand and be invested in heavily. So I'm just trying to do my little bit to help all that happen, Temple.
With that, it's very laudable. You were telling me earlier on about a little story about two bald men sitting on a beach. Can you just repeat that? Because I rather like that.
Yeah, I always try to bring pictures out that help people envision the problems that we're facing. And, you know, I was chatting to somebody a while back, trying to paint a picture of what climate change is for some people, and how people are fiddling around the edges a bit. And that boiled down to two bald guys sitting on deck chairs on a beach, fighting over a comb whilst the tide was rushing in to drown them. And that was really intended to bring out the fact that we seem to be, a lot of people, a lot of institutions, a lot of governments, a lot of companies seem to be doing an awful lot that's not really important and missing on the important stuff.
I think that's very true. Okay, so moving on a little bit, what is your daily interaction with the new technology? And do you come across Bitcoin and do you come across blockchain on a daily basis? Or what is your interaction with new technology? And do you have any interaction with both blockchain and Bitcoin on a daily basis?
So every day I'm privileged to see and be contacted by entrepreneurial businesses, entrepreneurial people, who have amazing solutions to help the fight against climate change. We have a platform, we host those businesses, we host around 380 funds from around the world, all interested in climate change. And one of the areas in which there are some really interesting developments sit around the use of blockchain to track emissions, like Scope 3 emissions. And you know, a bit more detail on that. Scope 3 emissions I describe as your customers' emissions. And they're the most difficult to track. In the banking sector, for example, the Scope 3 emissions are really the emissions of those to whom you lend money. Now, if you're a massive financial institution, you can imagine how difficult it is to actually track and report on those. And of course, reporting is going to become very quickly a legal obligation. It's not going to be a matter of choice. And we have on our platform now, for example, a blockchain business that is making really great strides with financial institutions in the United States and in Europe who are trialing the use of blockchain, which you earlier, Temple, described in a big help to me because I don't know a hell of a lot about blockchain. As effectively massive Excel spreadsheets that you can look through extraordinarily quickly. But they can be used for tracking, and I think they can be used for other things. And, you know, we're really interested about the use of those things in innovative ways, and indeed the use of lots of different forms of capital to help support these emerging sectors.
And that's really interesting. And as you say, the area three, if you like, for emissions is the biggest section. I mean, I was talking to Edinburgh Airport not that long ago, and their part one and part two, as it were, is well under control and not actually that massive. But the third part, which is again, is their customers coming to the airport and so on and so on, is absolutely massive. It's about 20 times what one and two are together. So it's a really serious area. So, okay, so are there specific sectors or industries with which you're working which are involved with blockchain? I think you've just sort of outlined one now. But, I mean, is there a path to go down to achieve these things? And are there certain sectors which are more susceptible to it than others?
There's definitely pathways. So when I'm talking to big businesses, let's take Siemens Energy, for example, a massive business that was spun out of the Siemens Group. And they have people, and big businesses in general have people, sometimes a person at the moment, but people whose responsibility it is to come up with ways that they can track their Scope 3 emissions. This is happening inside big businesses. It's not just the financial community that I mentioned earlier. That they understand that they have legal obligations. Many of them are quoted businesses. Their reporting is clearly very serious and very onerous, and they are preparing for ways in which they can report on all this stuff. And undoubtedly, they are trying to get their hands around the methods that can really work for them. And many of them are looking very closely at the use of blockchain to help them with that. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I think I might just add a little bit there about blockchain, and this is a simplistic answer, really, but it makes the point. When you send a transaction on a blockchain, there are two parts to the transaction. One part is, if you like, transferring one Bitcoin from Mr. A to Mr. B, but attached to that is a note. And the note is where you put whatever you want to do. For example, I mean, some poor child had all its birth details set on the Bitcoin blockchain some years back. And of course, unfortunately, she'll never be able to get into a nightclub or something until she's the right age, because everybody will know. But that may be something that actually is going to come, because it may well be that ID for people is going to be handled that way. And so in the same way, as the little note that all these transactions have, that is how the information that is required for tracking all these things is going to be handled. So it's a very it's a very specific, and as you probably know, it's immutable. It can't be changed, and that's really what's the most important part. So just moving on a little bit. So you're I know you're involved with particularly with Greenbackers, and I mean Greenbackers is an amalgam of several different people coming together. Run us through a usual day for you. What do you normally do?
So we have meetings with prospective ventures, prospective companies who want to come onto our platform. So we chat to them. We ask them to send us material. We have a look at their existing pitch decks, and we begin a process of onboarding them. Now that can be successful or not. It can lead to a number of interactions, including us helping them shape their ask of investors. We help them with envisaging the markets they're selling into. We help them get into those markets. I will also be speaking every day, pretty much, to some of our investors about interest in some of our companies. One of the things that we do a lot of, indeed, I'm just back from London, is attend conferences. You know, we like to think of ourselves as thought leaders. We get asked to do a lot in the clean tech and environment space. The conference I just returned from was a North Sea decarbonization conference and the role of clean technologies in that conference. So we will do some event planning in terms of attending others' events, and then we also run our own events. We've also recently been appointed by a global business, Technip FMC, to be their technology scouts. And for us, that's really interesting. It's a recognition that many big businesses who used to successfully bring out new technologies themselves, they simply don't do that anymore. They rely on others. And what they're finding is they are inundated with things that they find very difficult to assess. Whereas using us as an external private sector business, they can be assured that anything we take them has been through a process and it's highly likely to be relevant and to work. So listen, it's a big mixed bag. And one of the things that keeps me very enthusiastic about what I do, and you know, still at my advanced years, delighted to get up each morning, is the fact that I interact with so many different committed people.
That's a fantastic day's work. I like that very much. The other thing that you mentioned to me just before we came on air was about one of the people, I think you said was an old oil and gas man, who was, again, talking through the North Sea decarbonization process. And he was saying that, in fact, everything that's being done is really just scratching the surface. Can you amplify that for us?
Yeah. The problem in front of the world to decarbonize is absolutely massive, and really needs to be treated as an emergency and not like some slow car crash we all know is going to happen and we're standing by and watching, and then suddenly there's a car crash and we're all, oh dear, there's a car crash. This problem is huge. It's going to require a pound, every euro, every dollar that we can bring together. It's going to require innovative financial products, the use of coin, the use of blockchain, a carbon price. All sorts of things are going to have to come together. And there are laudable things happening. You know, planting trees to offset carbon. If you're planting trees, it's a laudable thing. But with like many solutions, on its own, it's not even going to scratch the surface of getting us to where we need to be to fight climate change. 1.5 degrees now is largely regarded as having gone. We're not going to keep it to 1.5 degrees, and that's kind of depressing. But one of the things that I always do is I always look positively, and there's so much good stuff happening. So many offshore floating wind farms happening, particularly off the coast of Scotland. So there's a lot happening. But the problem, the scale of the problem is massive, and we all need to pull together.
Yes, I think that's very clear. There is still a section of society, quite a large section of society, which claims that climate change is not even happening. So I don't even quite know how they can do that, but they are. We had a very interesting conversation, several conversations a few weeks ago. I was at a show in London, and whereas before people were asking about, you know, how could I make money and how can I do this, that, that thing, this time people were all asking, what are your green credentials or blue credentials, as the case may be? And they were very interested to know how, that in fact, with our blockchain that we use, which is the Ethereum blockchain, the energy usage had dropped by 99.5%. Now, that is a massive, massive change. Mm. This is not to say that it's still good. It's dropped from like a country like Switzerland usage down to like half a dozen tumble dryers, which is obviously a massive increase. And I believe, don't quote me totally on this, but I believe that the day that Ethereum switched over to proof of stake, world energy consumption dropped by 0.02%, which I thought was a really nice thing to happen.
Yeah.
And very pleasing. So, Andrew, here we are. You just mentioned that you raised some cash and one thing and another.
Yes.
You're obviously going to do more of the same thing. I mean, if you had to pick one thing where you thought this was actually going to make a change or make a difference, what would it be?
Well, I typically don't like or understand phone apps. I get asked to judge a lot of competitions, which include a lot of innovative technology. And typically, if I see an app on the list, I kind of take a bit of a deep breath. But I actually opened my eyes to apps a while back. And this may sound strange when I talk about big pieces of stuff painted yellow that can really make a difference in subsea and offshore. And yes, we do all of that. And yes, we do help businesses that are swapping electric engines into the bus fleets instead of diesel. We do all of that. One of the things that absolutely is clear is to make this work, we are going to have to change behaviors of the public. And there are an enormous number of willing people who want to do the right thing, as well as those deniers that you mentioned, Temple. But there is a great sense of isolation sometimes. If you're in a village or a town or a city and you're doing the right thing, but you see around you five or six people, your neighbors or whatever, who are not doing the right thing, you sometimes think, what is this all about? Now, I saw an app where you can record the things you are doing with people all over the world who are doing the same things. And what was happening was people were realizing that there's a massive community all trying to do the right thing. And that was helping to change behaviors. Now, actually, that kind of switched me around a little bit. So look for those sorts of apps. Do the right thing every day. You know, if we were all doing the right thing every day, and I include myself in all of this, I need to do more and I need to do better. But if we were all doing the right thing every day, then that problem that we've got, that massive climate change problem, would become a little easier to deal with.
That's really interesting. I love the idea of you actually make yourself part of a community. And that, of course, is one of the great themes of human life, is to be part of a community and so on. So I really like that as an idea very much indeed. Just one last thing I was going to ask you. I mean, people are always talking about the young and about the old and this, that, and the next thing. I mean, would you definitely say that young people are much more receptive to doing things to make things better? Or are they pretty much the same as everybody else?
Well, look, I think there's a great danger of wandering into a patronizing position here as an old person talking about young people. I do have kids. I've got a 22-year-old who's currently interrailing somewhere in Europe, and I have a 16-year-old who's in the middle of exams. I guess the best interaction I've had recently is we at Greenbackers have hired in three interns. These are just graduated from university. And believe me, it's energizing, it's amazing. They are so super intelligent, and myself and my colleagues are learning from them, and hopefully giving them a great experience too. They if insofar as they are representative of
of young people, and clearly questions could be asked about how representative they are, then yes, I am hugely hopeful. I think there is a massive willingness to do more. I think there is a determination to hold people like you and I, Temple, to account for the way things are. And it's not good enough for us to say, well, we individually are doing what we can, and hey, it wasn't our fault. It kind of was our fault, and we're not doing enough. So yes, I'm hugely hopeful, and all the interactions I have with people younger than me, and these days I regret to say that's nearly everybody I speak to, but the interactions I have fill me with hope that there is massive appetite to really, really tackle these problems.
Andrew, that's absolutely fantastic, and it's wonderful to hear your enthusiasm and your belief in the future, really, although you temper it with common sense and all the rest of it. So thank you very much indeed, and I appreciate you giving us the time, and I know you'd literally got off the train because you texted me on the train in the middle of the night to tell me you were on the train, so that was good. Thank you very much indeed, much appreciated.
It's been my real pleasure, and lovely to speak to you again, Temple.
Same here. Thank you.